The Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Michael Roizen. And check out Dr. Oz and Dr. Roizen's website, youbeauty.com. Here are Joe Galewski, Dr. Deb Lonser, and of course, Dr. Michael Roizen, MD.
Well, it's just Dr. Mike and Dr. Perry today. Joe Galewski, we had trouble connecting to him, and Deb isn't feeling up to it because her neck pain is hurting her. So we wish Deb a speedy recovery from her neck. Arthur, if you were going to do one test for longevity, what would it be, and how do you grade it? Well, I'm asking you a question that I know the answer to because it was the top medical news story of the week.
Oh, boy. That's a tough one, Mike. Okay.
Sent you these late because you don't normally get in on the top medical news stories of the week, but you actually are a real friend to tune in and give me help now. Let me give you the test. It's
all right.
Sit down on the floor. You could do this in your spare time during the commercial. And then get up from the floor, not touching the floor with any body parts, just using your legs to get up and down. And you count the number of body parts you have to touch the floor with. So in getting down, for example, I hit my knee on the floor. That's a negative one. And on getting up, I did that without anything. That gave me a score of 9. So you give yourself 5 for getting up, 5 for going down. And if you can do that with a perfect 10, you have only 1/10 of the chance of the average person over 55 of dying in the next 6 years, according to the study.
As opposed to if you have to
use your arms or hands to get up from the floor, et cetera, if you use 5 body parts to go down and 5 to get up, you're much higher risk. About a tenfold higher risk than average of dying in the next 10 years. And I can see Muriel, who's listening to us, because she emailed us, Muriel testing that right now, and I'll bet she can do it with at least a 9 score.
All right. Now, Mike, I just did it while you were... Fortunately, I have headphones that have a long cord. So I did it, and I used nothing to get down on the floor, but my knees both were required getting up. So what score does that give me?
An 8.
And what does that mean again?
That means
I'm dead before the end of the show?
Well, no, at an 8 score, you're actually in the lowest risk group, 8, 9, and 10. 10s did the best, of course, but 8, 9, and 10... mean that you're, if you will, about 4 times less likely to die than the average American in the next 10 years, than the average American of your age.
Now, I want to know how you can get up off the floor without touching your knees. That's tough.
Yeah, you sit down, and I just pick myself up without touching my knees. I don't know how I did it.
You can sit on the floor... You sit on the floor with your feet and your buttocks on the floor, and you can stand up without touching anything?
Yeah, what I did was I then stretched out, put my, if you will, legs on the floor, and then got up using my legs.
Okay.
Let's go to another subject.
I'm going to be working on that.
I see you like that one so much.
I'm going to be working on it.
Okay, and the other study that was really interesting was one done throughout the world, and it looked at how long people are living. Do you know the country with the longest life expectancy now?
There is an island somewhere I saw.
Well, Okinawa, that is Japan. But it's the Japanese in general are living the longest. The average age is 79 for men and 86 for women. That's 5 years longer for women and 3 years longer for men than in the United States, on average. If you're 65, how long are you likely to live? So you're 65 now, Arthur. You're not, of course. But if you're 65, how long are you likely to live? Well, the tables look like in the United States, you're likely to live to 89. That is 50% of people live to 89. 50% only live to 89. 50% live longer. In Japan, it's 92. Pretty impressive, wow. Eh? So bad economy doesn't appear to have hurt their longevity. Now, when you were talking about J.R. Martinez, you emailed me and said, you know, he lost one ear to the burn, and they could reattach an ear for him because there are people making ears from, if you will, skin and bone marrow cells, right?
They really are. It's the coolest new thing that's not quite ready for prime time, although I know they're doing it in your institution. But certainly in the next 10 years, it will be the standard to grow an ear. Let's say JR lost his ear from the burn. Now the surgery that's required to reconstruct an ear is extremely complicated and requires taking rib. That's where we get the cartilage. And we take rib cartilage and we implant it underneath the scalp, and it's a long series of operations to get a halfway decent looking ear. And you know, the honest truth is they never look too great, but at least they can hold eyeglasses up. But Mike, at Wake Forest and at Stanford, they're making ears, not the way we made them in residency by taking ribs, but they're taking those cells. What you call progenitor cells or stem cells, and they're making them, they're directing them to make cartilage around a scaffold, and they're doing this in test tubes, and then they're taking these things that look just like, the cartilage of an ear, and they're implanting it.
Yeah, no, and we're using, I think we're using the Wake Forest. We've been doing it with jaws. And ears, and as you pointed out, I understand pretty soon bladders at the Cleveland Clinic. So we're using those regularly now, and pretty soon we'll be doing anterior cruciate ligaments with it as well.
It's amazing. I know that.
The future of medicine seems to be here.
Yeah, it's coming. There's a very bright plastic surgeon, not me, Mike, but a guy named Michael Longacre. At Stanford, who's doing work like this, and even though he's a plastic surgeon, he's making esophaguses. Is that the plural of esophagus, by the way?
Esophagi? I don't know.
Esophagi? Well, he's making these things. It's so exciting that we're now at the cusp of making organs outside the body, so that the era, I think, of organ donors will probably be over in 10 or 20 or 30 years.
Need organ donors for kidneys or livers or hearts or lungs?
Yep.
Woo.
Or lungs or corneas. I think we will be growing them.
That's
so you put your order in.
How long will it take to grow them, do you think? It's a pretty interesting concept. You could grow your own lung. Wouldn't have to take suppression drugs. That is, they would figure out how to grow them. They'd take your cells from your bone marrow and use a scaffold, build them out, and you'd get a new lung.
Actually, Mike, they are taking the cells from fat now. They won't even need it from the bone marrow. They've got all the ingredients in fat.
So there is some reason to have excess fat.
That's right. Have a pizza and grow a lung.
That's a bad story. You've got everyone that I know of has plenty of fat, no matter how thin they are. Even Tom C., and I'm only using his first initial, who's listening right now, says he just texts, "I don't have any fat." Yeah, you do, Tom. You got enough fat to do this. In any case, you can email us questions. I have a set of wonderful questions I should get to. But I have a set of wonderful questions. When we come back, we'll get to Gary Ginsberg even better. And then we're going to talk a little bit about the flu in the last section. Gary's got some great stories. We'll be right back.
Fresh Healthy Vending, the most successful healthy vending machine business in the nation, is now seeking franchise partners. For the first time in your community, Fresh Healthy Vending is looking to launch its highly successful, profitable, and innovative vending concept. Here's how it works. Own your own route of bright, colorful, high-tech, healthy vending machines that offer a range of natural, organic, and healthy snacks and drinks. Yogurts, fresh fruit, juices, smoothies, fruit cups, iced tea, and more. Over 500 healthy products to choose from. These machines will be placed for you by Fresh's professional team of location specialists. Your machines will be making money in schools, businesses, retailers, hospitals, and other profitable locations throughout your community. Securing the most profitable locations for our franchise partners is Fresh Healthy Vending's number one goal. Own your own money-making vending business opportunity. Minimum investment, $80,000. Go to FreshVending.com for the full story. That's FreshVending.com. FreshVending.com.
Hi, I'm Dr. Regina Benjamin, U.S. Surgeon General. As a family doctor, I've seen the terrible impact of a premature birth. Losing a baby is one of the hardest things a family can go through. As Surgeon General, I see the toll that premature births have on our nation. It can cause lifelong disabilities. It is the leading cause of death in newborns. And our country has one of the highest rates of preterm birth in the world. We must do better. Hospitals need to ensure that babies are delivered early, only when medically necessary. We need research to find the causes of premature birth and research to find new ways to prevent it. Couples need to learn the risk of premature birth and what they can do to have a full-term baby, such as getting a preconception checkup. Remember, 40 weeks is a full-term pregnancy, and every week of pregnancy counts. Let's work together for stronger, healthier babies.
I am a face of influenza.
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 We all are faces of influenza.
I'm a mom. And I'm a face of influenza.
Health officials now recommend everyone 6 months of age and older get immunized against influenza this
and every year.
Vaccination is safe and is the best way to help protect yourself and your family from contracting and spreading the flu.
We all are faces of influenza.
See your healthcare provider about getting immunized. The American Lung Association urges everyone 6 months of age and older, and we mean everyone, to get vaccinated. Visit facesofinfluenza.org. Influenza is serious. So are we. Get vaccinated.
With the American Academy of Pediatrics, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin. October 8th through the 14th is National Fire Prevention Week, a great time to brush up on fire safety skills. We've all heard of stop, drop, and roll, but there's also the first up, last out rule. This method was developed after studies revealed that children don't always wake up when a fire alarm sounds. Even if they do, they are often disoriented and confused by the noise and commotion. Under these circumstances, children may decide it's safer to hide under the bed or in a closet than venture out into the darkness and smoke. First up, last out aims to avoid that situation. When a smoke alarm goes off, the first person up, usually an adult, is responsible for finding and ushering everyone out of the house. So while a working smoke detector more than doubles your chance of surviving a fire, it is also important to ensure that no one gets left behind. And for more information on children's health and safety, visit www.aap.org. With a Minute for Kids, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin.
If you've missed a show, the full audio library is at RadioMD.com. And now back to you, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
And this is Dr. Mike. We're joined now by one of my favorites, Gary Ginsberg. Now, Gary is up in Connecticut, so he's probably a little disturbed by what's happened, or a lot disturbed by what's happened. But Gary, I'm going to talk about just toxic subjects with you. And a lot of people begin to heat their home with wood pellets. Are they a bad source of carbon monoxide?
Well, you know, Mike, I just am switching over to a pellet stove, and I was surprised to learn that they can be a source of carbon monoxide, but it's a very small amount of emission. The pellets themselves are biologically active, and they're breaking down very slowly, and they release the off-gas. So it's more of a risk for those working in big pellet factories that have large amounts that are being made or stored. There, it's really worth having carbon monoxide detectors, make sure that there's enough ventilation. But for the average homeowner that's storing it, in the garage, it's really not toxic. So it's one of those things that's it's not toxic. As a matter of fact, pellet stoves release less emissions than a wood stove, less than oil heat. So,
less than oil heat, and if you heat oil with oil in your basement furnace,
yes,
you get more carbon monoxide release than a wood pellet stove.
Yeah, you'd get, well, I'm not talking about that kind of release, sorry, Mike, but the up the chimney, what goes, the gases that go to pollute the outside air, and carbon change, amount of carbon that gets released. Actually, wood pellets are much more efficient than oil, and also release less toxins to the outdoor environment. And, a pellet stove is not going to put carbon monoxide into your home because it's so well vented. The only issue with the pellets were, again, the when they're in storage, the carbon monoxide release, but that's really minor. So you don't want
to store them in a garage that's closed.
A confined space. Now, you wouldn't want to have them, for example, in like a little crawl space in the basement or a closet that you have to climb into and the door closed behind you. You wouldn't want that if it's a really tight, confined space. That's true.
And would you eat horse meat, Gary?
Well, besides the fact that I'm vegetarian, but, it doesn't sound good, but in France, it's a bit of, it's very common. And during World War II, when there were meat shortages in Europe, eating horse meat became more accepted, and so it's still on many menus, and they eat tons of horse meat a year. I wouldn't. I know most Americans turn their nose up to it, but it is heavily exported to Europe. And the issue with horse meat is that there's been an increasing use of pharmaceuticals, some legal and some doping-type pharmaceuticals, in thoroughbreds. And when they go off to the glue factory, they could still have substantial concentrations of these drugs in their flesh. And so Europe is now cracking down and saying they're not going to take any horse meat for sale in Europe. They're not going to take any of it from the United States if it comes from our racetracks. And that could be hard to sort out. A lot of the horse meat goes to Canada and goes to Mexico. You can't render it legally in this country, so they ship the horses up to Canada or down to Mexico, and that could come from farms, it could come from racetracks. It may be hard to sort. So testing is going to increase. Europe is concerned about getting too many pharmaceuticals in their horse meat.
Now, I should tell you one story about what happened with the meat shortage in Norway and Finland in World War II. You probably know this since you're a vegetarian, but because the Germans took all their cows and meat, they had to go vegetarian. And with that, when they went vegetarian, guess what? In fact, one of the good parts of going vegetarian is their heart disease fell by over 60% in those 3 years.
Well, and that's remarkable, Mike, when you think about all the stress being in a war environment on their bodies, psychological stress, and yet they got better with their heart disease. So that's quite a success story.
It is. I agree. The last story one of the other stories that you wanted to talk about that I wanted to hear was pregnant women don't learn about
About toxins.
Mercury.
Yeah, mercury and other toxins. Yeah, this was a very interesting survey that was done of 2,600 OBs and gynecologists, the doctors who are telling women how to be safe during their pregnancy. And, they're mostly focusing on alcohol and cigarettes and certain drugs that may be too toxic during pregnancy. And they're not at all focused. Most docs are not really aware of or focused on things like mercury in fish, which is completely avoidable. It's not to say don't eat any fish. Fish are good for the developing nervous system, but eat the right fish.
Well, and, you know, most prenatal vitamins have DHA, dexahexaenoic acid. Just look for DHA in them, and that's what you really want.
Yeah, you could steer clear of the mercury. You know, my department at the State Health Department, you know, we make fact sheets about eating the right fish during pregnancy, and they're very popular in the rack at the OB and GYN. But that doesn't mean that the OBs and GYNs are telling women about this. So if you know anyone that's pregnant or you're going to be pregnant, make sure you become aware of these kinds of toxic issues. The story talked about a doctor who was telling her patients when they're pregnant, don't fill up with gasoline. Let your husband put the gas in the car because there's exposure to petrol hydrocarbons that you don't need to expose your baby to.
That's pretty good. And we did get a comment from a nurse midwife that's why you should, in fact, use nurse midwives. They talk about those subjects better. The combination, the combination is probably a very good one for most people.
Yeah.
Now, one more subject, Gary. What was the other subject you wanted to talk
smoking,
about?
Smoking, yeah. How smoking may choke your child who's sitting in the car seat. And that's a study that was just done in Scotland where they put a PM detector, particulate matter detector, in the back seat, like right where a child would be sitting. And they had people who smoke. And they just said to these people, do what you normally do, windows up, windows down, have the radio on, radio off, smoke five cigarettes or one cigarette or half, whatever you normally do. And the average length of the ride was 27 minutes. So these are like commuting kind of rides, dropping the kid off to childcare and then going to work. And they found the levels of particulate matter, PM2.5, in the back seat of the car where the kid would normally be strapped in, were, on average, 85 micrograms per cubic meter, maximum up near 1,000.
That's huge. The 85 is even huge.
Yeah, 85 is not. Yeah, the World Health Organization recommends no more than 25. And even that's probably not the safest number. So, you know, in terms of asthma reaction, in terms of infections and colds and coughs, this is, you know, think about a child spending a half hour each way, every day, exposed to those kinds of exposure chamber concentrations, very unhealthy for the developing lungs. So there really need to be standards set. Some municipalities are thinking about having a no-smoking law when there's children in the car.
Well, I think that's a very good idea. Now, what do you know about brominated vegetable oil, Gary?
That's a new one on me. Mike, send me the link. Where did you see this?
Well, it turns out that Gatorade and a number of Pepsi drinks and, in fact, even some of the Snapple orange-flavored drinks have brominated vegetable oil in them. We'll discuss it next week because it causes thyroid dysfunction. And maybe that's the reason we've got so much increase in hypothyroidism in younger people now.
We'll be on it next week then, Mike.
Brominated vegetable oil, avoid it, and I don't know why it's needed, what it does, but it certainly doesn't sound very good. It got a GRAS certification, which means the FDA passed on it in 1930, tried to take it off the market, but got a lot of protests. We'll talk about that later in the next segment with Dr. Perry and you, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, and next week with Dr. Ginsberg. Keep listening, and thanks for listening.
Are you always looking for places to stop and rest because you're short of breath, wheezing, or coughing? Who wants to live like that? See your doctor for a simple breathing test to find out if it's COPD, a serious lung disease. With treatment, soon you could be living more and stopping less. Visit copd.nhlbi.nih.gov. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Did you know only about 3% of the CEOs of Fortune 500 companies are women?
And of the 18,000 police chiefs in America, less than 2% are women.
So it's no wonder that only one in five girls believes she has what it takes to lead.
But did you know?
We can change that.
The time you spend with a girl now.
The words you say to her today.
Can give her the courage, confidence, and character to become a leader tomorrow.
So speak up.
Get involved.
Nurture her potential.
Share your experience.
Invest your resources.
Did you know?
Together, we can get her there.
Get started today. Visit togetherthere.org.
With the American Academy of Pediatrics, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin. The U.S. is experiencing an increase in the number of cases of whooping cough. This is a serious illness caused by pertussis bacteria. It often starts with what seems like a common cold. Then, especially for toddlers, the cough worsens and leads to the characteristic whoop sound on inhaling. During this phase of the illness, which usually lasts more than 2 weeks, the child can get short of breath and the skin around the mouth may turn blue. Older children may cough so hard they vomit. The illness can be particularly deadly for infants who can develop complications such as pneumonia and seizures. Whooping cough is highly contagious and can spread to children who have not been vaccinated. The best way to prevent this dangerous illness is to be sure your child received all doses of the pertussis vaccine. This is usually given as the DTaP vaccine. And for more information on preventing whooping cough, visit www.cisp.org. With a Minute for Kids, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin.
It's one thing to have a job in this economy, but it's another to have a career that you love. Getting the skills for today's careers may depend on your college degree. So if you're interested in the future of business, electronics, information technology, or drafting and design, call ITT Technical Institute today. With over 100 campuses nationally, ITT Tech can prepare you for a career in one of these fields. After all, tens of thousands of ITT Tech grads have built a solid future. Perhaps they can do the same for you. Classes meet just a few times a week, and financial aid is available to those who qualify. So what's stopping you? For more information and to schedule your campus tour, call ITT Tech toll-free at 800-574-1319. That's 800-574-1319. ITT Technical Institute, education for the future. 800-574-1319.
I can solve difficult problems for a Fortune 500 company.
I can run a successful business.
I can put my military experience to work for your company.
I can manage your home improvements.
I can publicize a message.
I can teach your children.
But I can't put my skills to work for your organization
if I'm not given the opportunity.
Nearly 50 million Americans have disabilities. Capitalize on their talents with employment practices that benefit everyone. Learn more at whatcanyoudocampaign.org.
Hi, I'm Olympic gold medalist Shawn Johnson. I want to make sure you know about the March of Dimes, March for Babies. This walk is really special to me. I was born with an Apgar score of 0, which is not an ideal way to start. Every day, babies start life the same way, with the odds stacked against them. Their first steps are made possible by ours, all of ours. Take the first step at marchforbabies.org. Let's walk together for stronger, healthier babies.
And now back to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show. And now joining Drs. Roizen and Lonzer is renowned plastic surgeon, Dr. Arthur Perry.
And Dr. Perry is here, but also Dr. Susan Rehm, who's one of my idols because of what she does with infectious disease, and someone who's, I think it was her mom or maybe her grandmom, who I was given a book on, and obviously I did not read it well enough. So I'm going to let Susan talk about the flu. This is a horrible flu season, is it not, Susan?
It really is, Mike, and thank you for your kind introduction. By the way, Anna is the great-great-granddaughter of Emily Post.
Great-great.
So, yes.
So it was this book of Emily Post I was given that obviously neither Arthur Perry nor I follow very well.
Well, we can't tell that over the radio. So
that's the beauty of radio.
But anyway, you're right. The CDC came out last week and said this is the earliest flu season that they've seen in almost a decade. And while we can't predict exactly what flu seasons are going to be like, Anna and I are trying to get the word out about flu prevention and about flu etiquette. And we want to remind people that the CDC has a take-three approach to flu prevention. Take time to get a flu vaccine.
Take time to get a flu vaccine is number one. What's number two?
Number two is take personal protection measures like covering your cough, staying home when you're sick, and washing your hands frequently, obviously. And these are things that can both prevent spread and hopefully also keep you from getting sick. And the third thing is take prescription antiviral medications if you get influenza. Your doctor may prescribe them for you.
Yeah, and I can tell you, I think that's really important. One of the family members of one of our employees here only got the flu shot 5 days ago, and 3 days after that, unrelated to that, obviously, he got a severe case of the flu and actually got delirious and was hospitalized in one of the Cleveland Clinic ICUs. He's doing, obviously, after flu medicine, I don't know whether it's obvious, but after flu medicine, he's doing much better and is back at home. So we wish him well.
Thank goodness.
But that's from getting the flu vaccine too late.
Yes, and that brings up another point, because probably the most common thing you and I and a lot of doctors hear is, I'm not going to take the flu vaccine, I got the flu from it. And you can't get the flu from the flu vaccine. What you can get is something that may have been incubating before, and, you know, in the flu season, there are a lot of other respiratory illnesses besides influenza. So please, I'd love to dispel that rumor about influenza vaccine.
Good. And now the other thing is to increase the take rate. The influenza vaccine is, what, 70% effective?
Depends on the person, but we know it's not 100% preventive, but it's much, much better than anything else we have.
And to increase that, the data, at least that I've seen, are you get a good night's sleep for 2 nights beforehand, increases success rate, and so does taking a multivitamin for 3 days beforehand. So those are my add-ins to it. But now talk to us about what would Emily Post say about if someone got the flu, what should they do?
Sure. Emily Post would say what we would say now about this, which is that for our sake tonight, flu prevention and etiquette really do go, and I have to quote Dr. Rehm on this one, hand in washed hand. You know, prevention and etiquette are very much the same. So whether it's coughing into the crook of an elbow or using a tissue and then disposing of it, you know, instead of just sneezing or coughing out into the air or into your hand, you know, these are the types of practices that really can help to prevent the spread of flu, which from an etiquette point of view, not just health, really is the considerate thing to do. You know, if you think you have symptoms, please stay home rather than going out where you may get other people sick.
And what do you do about, is a virus killed by those Purell and Outlast and those things that have the hand sanitizer, Susan?
Well, a lot of bacteria and viruses are inactivated by those things. But remember that the influenza and other respiratory illnesses are primarily spread through the air. So we'll always talk about hand washing, and that does help, because whatever you touch, you may then touch your eyes, nose, or mouth, and that may spread virus that way. So if you keep your hands clean, the chances of doing that go down. But the other part of this, and the only thing you can do really is to get the vaccine to prevent it, is all the stuff that's coming through you through the air, those droplets that you breathe in.
And we do have a question, and I guess it was occasioned by my comment about too late. And the question from Jason on the email line at udocs@gmail.com. Jason writes, is it too late to get a flu vaccine? I haven't gotten one yet.
It is not too late to get a flu vaccine. Go out and get it now.
So the only time it's too late is after you've already had the flu. And since there are three types of influenza making their way around, two of the A's and one of the B's, it's probably not even too late after you get the flu. Is that right?
I would still give it, especially for somebody who's hospitalized, but for anybody, really. And I think it's very important that people understand that influenza and cold are very different. Influenza kills thousands of people every year. There's over 200,000 hospitalizations. And it typically, as you mentioned, Mike, comes on very suddenly with fever and aches and chills and so on. Remember the word fax: fever, aches, chills, tiredness, sudden onset. That distinguishes the flu from a cold, and that may be something to stimulate you to call your doctor right away. If you call right away, and that means within 48 hours at the most, you might benefit from the antiviral medication.
Now, colds are helped by chicken soup. How about the flu?
You know, prescription antiviral drug works a lot better than soup, but the soup makes you feel good.
Well, good. Thank you very much. And thank the great-granddaughter, the great-great-granddaughter of Emily Post. Is it Anna Post?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you and Susan for being on with us. And hopefully those in the, you know, anytime, and I know there's someone named Muriel online because I did get to persuade to get a flu vaccine this year, and she always listens in. Anytime first time in a long while, I persuaded her I showed her the data on how bad the flu season was on Google.org. It's Google.org/flutrends. You can see it for yourself. And anytime I persuade someone to get the flu shot who hasn't gotten it in a while, I make sure they get it immediately before they change their mind, because I think I'm doing such a good thing. So thank you guys for being
That's
on.
That's great. And check out flufacts.com, another place where you can check out flu activity in your area. And for the kids, you can download a coloring book all about flu. Are you a flu fighter?
Flufacts.org?
.com.
Thanks very much. Now, Arthur Perry, back to you. The FDA has said that these sterilizers we're using on the skin, they don't patrol whether they're sterile or not, the betadine and all those things we use. Is that right?
Mike, this was a story that really surprised me, I have to say. This was in the New England Journal of Medicine last week, which is one of the world's premier medical journals. And it turns out, Mike, that the very things that we put on our skin to sterilize our skin may not be sterile. Unbelievable. We're talking about betadine and chlorhexidine and Purell, right? So, Mike, maybe when we return from the break, we can get into this story because it is so important.
And we're also going to talk about the FDA and their, if you will, free speech loss, which is a very important thing. Off-label drugs now can be talked about by drug reps if this judgment holds. We'll be right back. You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show on RadioMD.com and GabRadio.com, as well as your local station.
Great Start Life Insurance, offered by Guaranteed Trust Life Insurance Company, ensures the insurability of your child. Now, what does that mean? Well, too often people will get an illness or an injury at some point in their lives that afterwards precludes them from receiving life insurance, and that can cause a lot of problems. By insuring your children now with the Great Start Plan, the insurance that grows with your child, they'll already be insured regardless of future illness or injury. Find out about the rates and all the great benefits of the Great Start Plan. Go to GreatStartGTL.com, enter the station's call letters, and as a thank you for applying, we'll give you a free non-insurance prescription discount card, good for substantial savings on prescriptions and other medical tests. Keep and use the discount card even if you should cancel your Great Start Juvenile Life Insurance policy. The free discount card is not insurance, and discounts are available only at participating pharmacies. The discount medical plan organization providing this discount card is Vantage America Solutions, Inc. Ensure the insurability of your child and check out the Great Start Plan. Plan not available in all states. Life insurance underwritten by Guaranteed Trust Life Insurance Company, Glenview, Illinois. Peace of mind. Now at GreatStartGTL.com. That's GreatStartGTL.com.
Downsized, outsourced, pink slipped, afraid of losing your home? Forbes magazine named our company one of the top 10 business ideas of 2012, where ordinary people are creating extraordinary incomes.
Hi, I am Elena from Miami. I was a traditional business owner with all the headaches that come with that. But I replaced that multiple franchise income working from home full time, and I spent all the time I want with my son.
Get out of the rat race. Work from home and start earning great money as soon as next week.
Hi, David from Boston. I was in the real estate industry industry for 12 years when the bottom completely fell out of that business. I really had my back against the wall with five young kids depending on me. I've now been in this business for less than a full year, and I'm actually better off today, income-wise, than I was in my best year ever in real estate.
Go to OneOccupyWealth.com now and change your life today. That's the number OneOccupyWealth.com. OneOccupyWealth.com. Start earning great money as soon as next week.
I didn't think it was anything.
I had pain in my abdomen. It just wouldn't go away.
I was spotting, but I had already gone through menopause.
These symptoms may be nothing, but they could be early warning signs of a gynecologic cancer, such as cervical, ovarian, or uterine cancer.
Seeing my doctor probably saved my life.
Warning signs are not the same for everyone. If you think something's wrong, see your doctor. Ask about gynecologic cancer. Call 1-800-CDC-INFO for more information. A message from the Inside Knowledge Campaign and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
This is Tour de Cure, and it's more than just a bike ride. It's a celebration. It's where every turn of the pedal helps stop diabetes. Where cyclists of all levels come together to make a difference, to raise money, and to raise hope. It's the ride of your life. It's Tour de Cure. Register today at diabetes.org/tour. That's diabetes.org/tour.
With the American Academy of Pediatrics, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin. Kids often test parental limits and rules, and sometimes parents decide enough is enough. That's when a timeout may be effective. Timeouts stop children from getting attention after they misbehave. Timeouts work best for children between the ages of 2 and 5, but can be effective for kids as old as 10 in some cases. A rule of thumb is 1 minute of timeout for every year of your child's age. For example, a 4-year-old would get a 4-minute timeout. Some guidelines for a timeout. Give the timeout immediately after the unacceptable behavior so your child knows why she's being disciplined. Explain clearly why the behavior was unacceptable. Calmly place your child in a quiet, boring, but secure place. If she gets up, quietly explain that her timeout isn't over and return her to her seat. When it is over, wipe the slate clean and remember to praise your child each time and every time she shows acceptable behaviors. With a minute for kids, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin.
And now back to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show. Here are the You Docs, Dr. Michael Roizen and Dr. Arthur Perry.
Now, Arthur, when we went to break, we were talking about this craziness of the FDA not testing sterilizer liquids as being sterile. That doesn't make any sense. And the companies apparently weren't testing it either because a bunch of them came out contaminated.
You know, Mike, in the 1970s, rules for sterility came out, sterility in drugs. They decided that the sterilants, things like betadine and chlorhexidine and alcohol, did not need to be made sterilely because their pharmacologic activity, that means the actual drug, killed bacteria. So why bother making it sterilely if it killed bacteria? And what an enormous mistake that was. And over the years, there have been funny infections that have occurred both in people after surgery and after intravenous line placement that they couldn't quite figure out. And they're beginning to get enough data now to realize that actually coming from the very agents we're using to sterilize the skin. So each and every one of those things that I mentioned, and I'm not talking about the brand name betadine, but the chemical and the chemical chlorhexidine and alcohols have been implicated in harboring bacteria and actually causing infections. So the FDA's finally getting off their feet. They're getting up off the floor like I did a while back. And they held a hearing last week. And on the basis of the comments that they got in the hearing, they're gonna probably come up with a new rule that will probably, but not definitely, require that these different agents be sterile. The most shocking thing to me, Mike, as a surgeon, for the last 30 years, I've been coating the skin before surgery with betadine. And I had no idea no idea that there was not a federal requirement that that be checked to make sure that indeed it was sterile. Isn't that incredible?
To me, it's incredible. It really is incredible. The other thing that I saw that was earth-changing in the FDA, if you will, was the FDA doesn't allow you to talk about, if you're a drug representative, off-label uses. That is, if you get a drug approved for one thing, you can't talk about it, even if it's been shown in the medical literature to be good for something else, until you get that regulation, that authority, through the FDA process, if you will. And that's as a safety factor, so that once, you know, drug X gets approved, it isn't talked about for drugs Q, X, and Z, and P uses, which aren't really good for it. So it's been a safety factor. Well, a company and the companies have paid over $50 billion, that's B with a billion, in fines because of doing that. So Abbott had to pay for talking about, for its sales reps talking about an off-label use, etc. Well, it turns out one of these companies sued for it, and lo and behold, it was judged free speech by a circuit court of appeals. What do you know about that, Arthur?
Well, I think it's a very, very interesting story, and it extends even beyond pharmaceuticals, but everything that the FDA regulates, like cosmetics, Mike, the same sort of thing. If you have a cosmetic, like a vitamin C on the skin, do you know that legally you are not allowed to say that it stimulates collagen, even though there are over 1,000 papers that say it does?
Why can't you say that?
Because then the FDA, and they sent out about a dozen warning letters to companies, they will call it a drug. So it's no longer a cosmetic, even though it's just vitamin C that we rub on our skin. You know, so the FDA needs to take a hard look at itself. We're in a new era, and that free speech, you know, I think it's valid. You know, they've got to come up with a new rule, as they do for cosmetics also that actually have biologic functions.
So what we're saying is both the FDA isn't doing enough for safety and may be doing too much for some other things that may not, that are regulations that were intended for safety but may not do that as well. It's a tough job the FDA has. They're such a wonderful organ. I mean, they protect us so well. It's very tough how complex their job is, eh?
Oh, absolutely. You know, their charge is so enormous. The entire world's country's food supply, devices, drugs, it's enormous. You know, but sometimes they do go a little bit astray, like what I said about the vitamin C thing. I think they should spend their money and their time regulating betadine, not vitamin C.
Regulating betadine, not vitamin C. Let's do a tip of the week.
Now on You, the Owner's Manual, this is the Real Age Tip of the Week with Michael Roizen, MD.
And this tip, causes and treatments for ringing in your ears. There's a new reason for you, us too, to spend less time with your cell phone pressed against your head. Sanjay Gupta said it in the interview with Dr. Oz. He's really worried about brain waves and the increase in certain specific abnormalities in your brain. Because cell phones have really only been tested for 4 years, not for 10 years, not for young kids growing up, etc. And believe it or not, the requirements are testing it for 10 minutes a day. Do you use it for more than 10 minutes a day? I do. But I've got a wire with it, and that's the safe way of using it, with a wire so that the antenna is way far away from you. And don't put the antenna in a breast pocket. Don't take the phone in a breast pocket or in a, if you will, your side pocket near your groin, because those put it in a, keep it away from your body and on a table or something so you don't have to hold on to it when you're talking with it. The reason is that people who, there's another problem, though, and that is getting ringing in the ears. People who've been using cell phones for at least 4 years for 10 minutes a day have found a 70% chance of getting tinnitus or tinnitus at some point. That's that ringing in your ears if you use it for more than 4 years for more than 10 minutes per day. That's an amazing thing. So what do you do? Well, 10% of us have tinnitus, and there's no fix or learn to live with it. We're not buying that. There is a well way of getting to it. We're not going to have time to do it today. So, Sonar, we're going to start out with this. The next live show we do, which next 2 weeks will be best of. But when we come back in January, we're going to do tinnitus or tinnitus and cell phones and how to get rid of it. First thing, have a great holiday season. Enjoy it. Say peace. Thank people. Thank you, Sonar, and thank you for listening, and thank you, Arthur.